This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to the All You Can Eat NFL Podcast, brought to you by our friends at Lazy Boy, home of the legendary recliners. I'm Paul Chapman. This is JJ Adams. We are sitting in our Lazy Boy recliners. And a reminder, the whole reason that we can do this for you is if you go to lazynfl.com, you can win great prizes like these wonderful, soft, plush leather recliners, plus Seahawks tickets, trip to Seattle hotel. There's a whole bunch of stuff there at lazynfl.com if you would like to win.
Best way to watch a football game.
It really is. Like, I'm having a hard time talking. I'm so comfortable here. I just kind of want to have a nap. But it is a remarkable way to watch an NFL
game. I am really surprised you've not pulled rank and said one of these needs to be in your office / goldfish bowl.
Goldfish bowl, cubby hole. Yes. My barn door sliding cubicle. So, anyhow, JJ, welcome to the Lazy Boy NFL podcast. Let's talk a little bit about what happened last week in the NFL. First week, you can throw some stuff out. Certainly, the panic for the New England Patriots might be over. But I'm not sure if 2 weeks equals a trend yet. But what were the themes or teams that jumped out at you the most from the first 2 weeks?
Well, let's start locally with the Seahawks. Everyone had pegged all the problems with the Seahawks offense coming from the offensive line. But the thing is, so they lost, or they won this week against the 49ers. They were losing 9-6 in the fourth quarter. 9-6 to the 49ers. And if it wasn't for a one good drive and a touchdown to Paul Richardson, who incidentally played almost the entire game after suffering a compound fracture on his ring finger, and he catches the game-winning touchdown. That's pretty crazy.
Try doing that on a broken ankle. That's some massive.
Oh, please. There. You got a pin in it. It's not the same. So the Seahawks had 250 yards in offense the week before, 225 yards, and scored 9 points. A lot of field goals, not many touchdowns. People had put the problems down to the offensive line, the running game, but they had a pretty good game this week from their running back, Chris Carson, 93 yards, 20 carries. That's decent. It really looks like the problems are with Russell Wilson and his inability to create any big plays.
So, JJ, if you look at that, the Seahawks are 26th in total offense, 28th in scoring, 28th in red zone offense, and 22nd on third down. Russell Wilson has experience. He's known for being a cool customer. It's not like this is a rookie who gets flustered. Their offensive line isn't great, but it's interesting to hear you pin more of this on the quarterback himself.
Well, because the excuse before was last year he was hurt. You know, this year he's healthy now, but we're seeing the same problems. You know, where is the issue? It's not with the offense. They've tried to tweak things to make it easier for him to get some passes off, but he's still not making those big plays that they need. Even not big plays, even like 15 plus yard plays, they're not making them.
Well, he was more mobile last week, and he did get them a few first downs on the ground. But you know, this is the third year, pretty much, not full year, but the third season of the Jimmy Graham experiment. Graham was brought in as tight end to alleviate the red zone problems in particular. But why, in your opinion, is this not clicking? Why has Jimmy Graham come, frankly, not even close to the levels he was at in New Orleans?
Well, part of it, injuries. He's dealing with an ankle injury this year. He was injured last year. It seems like tight end is probably the most injured position in the NFL. If you look at Rob Gronkowski, Tyler Eifert.
Out this week with a back again, yeah.
I'm sorry, Paul. I'm sorry about your Bengals. I'm really not sorry about your Bengals. But injuries, and he hasn't been utilized properly. Like, they haven't. He's such an athletic player, and he doesn't get those opportunities. He doesn't get the ball in the right times, the right places.
Let me interject here a little bit. Yeah, okay, so maybe the finger's being pointed at Russell Wilson a little bit. Offensive line has been
terrible.
A question terrible. There for the last 3-4 years. But one of the Seahawks' most favorite whipping boys is offensive coordinator Darrell Bevell. And if you look, I mean, it's not like Wilson is attempting to get the ball to Jimmy Graham and he's not being accurate. It's not like Jimmy Graham's dropping the ball or, you know, not making the effort or running his routes. Are they just not looking for him enough? How much of the Seahawks' offensive woes fall on the shoulders of their offensive coordinator?
Well,
since the pass in the Super Bowl at the 1 yard line has really been, you know, the drawn the ire of all Seahawks fans.
Yes. Well, that was the reason that my boy Derek Carr called the Seattle Audible in his game with the Oakland Raiders last week, switching to a throw with Marshawn Lynch on the,
on the 1 yard line.
Oh, they were on the 1 yard line. That was great. But he's not the one making the passes. That's still down to Russell Wilson. They've tried to amend the offense to make it a little more, a little easier on the offensive line, and they're still not getting it done. So, is it the scheme or is it the players? I'm kind of trending towards the player on this one.
So the Seahawks are struggling offensively. Gave you the statistics a little while ago. They're not the only ones. Honestly, you have to wonder, JJ, if many offensive coordinators throughout the league are sitting in their lazy boy, lying back, and falling asleep instead of working on a game plan, which, you know, we could understand with these lazy boys being so comfortable and all. But if you look through 2 weeks, scoring's down to 40.3 points a game. That's the lowest figure in the first 2 weeks of a season in 20 years.
That's crazy. It's
significant. Total net yardage is 644 yards a game. That's down more than 70 yards from the first 2 weeks in last season. And it's the lowest yardage in the first 2 weeks of a season since 2010. What do you put this down to? I have a theory.
Roger Goodell.
You put it down to Roger Goodell.
No, all right. I have no idea.
Is this just a case of, you know, we saw like when the zone blitz came in or the wildcat on offense, one sort of faction seems to get a leg up and there's trends throughout the league and then it takes a while to adjust. Are we seeing a defensive trend in the league now?
That's really kind of tough to say through two games. Sure, the scoring's been down through the first 2 weeks. It could be just down to matchups. It's tough to say. Is it a trend of defenses getting better? I don't know. That's a good question.
You want to hear my theory? Of course you do.
I as I sit here in my lazy boy recliner trying not to fall asleep, I will listen to your theory.
I will put you asleep now. Okay. All right. Okay. I'll try not to be too long-winded. Look, we have seen some devastating injuries through the last several years in the NFL. Well, frankly, we always have. But as we see now that the NFLPA has got assurances in terms of mini camps and offseason for a lack of contact, they've taken hitting out of the camps. By the bargaining unit, they've got that. It seems to me in the preseason that the star players are playing less and less. And they do not want to waste when teams aren't used to, say, getting hit. They say you need to practice getting hit as well. Whether or not that's true or not, we know the CFL just banned it in practice completely during the season. But I noticed in this preseason, and it's happened, frankly, over the last few years, you're seeing the stars literally play hardly any snaps. You know, maybe a series in the first game. A lot of times the stars don't even play in the first game. Second game, they might play a bit more. It used to be that they'd play at least a full half in the third game. You're seeing the starting units yanked after the first quarter. And then the last preseason game, they already know who they're going to cut. It's for the bubble boys. Tom Brady's not going to play any snaps in the fourth quarter. So for me, I think as a defensive player, you can still rely on your athleticism and your scheme and be there. It's timing isn't as important. So I think with the lack of you're not taking preseason seriously, you're trying to avoid injuries. I think that's why we've seen the first couple of weeks. Guys are still rusty. They don't have their timing down. The schemes aren't there.
But as a fan, would you rather watch, say, Peyton Manning under center or Brock Osweiler? Peyton Manning goes down in preseason. Your season's hoop. You got Brock Osweiler in there. I mean, we're talking a couple of years ago, of course. Just an example. But I would kind of have to side with the air on the side of caution and not put those guys in there in preseason, because it is preseason. It is meaningless. Sure, they may be rusty, but they're still going to be those star players, and they're still going to make those plays as the season gets.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think preseason football is the most worthless thing in terms of a spectacle from what you're watching. But I'm just looking for an explanation, because there was a story today from the Hollywood Reporter that said that Wall Street's getting concerned.
Hollywood Reporter?
Yeah. Keep up. It's a trade magazine that talks about TV and everything.
I don't read trade magazines.
Yeah, maybe you should.
Maybe I should. Please, continue.
Anyhow, the theory is Wall Street is concerned that the ratings are continuing to slide for the NFL significantly. We saw that, you know, the numbers aren't good. We've seen all sorts of reasons for this as well, JJ. People following on social media, mobile, illegal streams. People aren't necessarily sitting down and watching games like they used to. But to me, it's marquee matchups as well. First game, I was really looking forward to Seattle and Green Bay. This is all probably intertwined. But that was a terrible game. It was boring. I mean, yes, there were a couple of bad calls by the officials, but it did not provide the drama, the shootout that we all expected. And I'm struggling to find a marquee game that we've had in the first couple of weeks here. You know, Dallas and Denver should have been a big game last week. It ended up being, I know there was a delay because of lightning, but it ended up being a blowout. There are star players that around the league who aren't looking as good as they have in the past. And again, maybe this is a timing issue. Maybe it's just early in the season and you have to look at these first 2 weeks almost as if they're preseason games. But apparently there are people starting to get concerned. There's so much TV revenue tied into those networks. And if the ratings aren't there, something big is going to have to happen.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a trend too. You just have to look back to the playoffs last year. There was only a couple games that had any real drama to them. They were great games.
One of them in the Super Bowl.
One of them in the Super Bowl. Yeah. The Green Bay Dallas Cowboys game, is going to go down in history as one of the most exciting games. The Super Bowl will go down as one of the most frustrating games for everyone who doesn't live in Boston. But yeah, it definitely is a trend. There has been more and more blowouts, non-competitive games, boring games, 12-9 games. Thanks, Seahawks. So I agree. Definitely.
Well, it's the funny thing is the NFL actually relaxed the celebration rules this year to try and shed their no fun image, but no fun league image. But honestly, through the first couple of weeks, I've struggled to find a game that really got me excited. And those big marquee games that are in the national slots, the Monday night games haven't been good. The Sunday night games, you know, one of the teams that's a big disappointment is the New York Giants.
They're a disappointment?
Well, I think there were a lot of people looking at the NFC East and thinking the Giants kind of do this, like good year, bad year. They still won 11 games last year, beefed up the defense, but their offense is terrible. I mean, I know Beckham Jr. has been injured and is struggling with that. Eli Manning's been terrible, frankly. But the New York Giants, not that they were a team that were a real Super Bowl contender, but they were in the conversation. They looked dreadful at 0-2. And they get, again, because of the market, they get those. We had Dallas and New York in the first game of the season on the Sunday night game, and it was awful. So I'm looking around the league now, and I'm hoping that as we hit week three, if it is timing, if it is preparation, that some of these stars actually start to perform. Because, you know, even Green Bay Atlanta last week, we talked about Green Bay Seattle not being a good game. Last week, Green Bay Atlanta was supposed to be a great game, and excitement around Atlanta Stadium probably surpassed the excitement around the game because it was not as competitive as people thought it might be.
No, there were some glimmers in there, but the Falcons finally learned to hold on to a lead. But yeah, when your most exciting game is Miami LA Chargers, you have a problem with ratings for sure.
Well, let's talk about Atlanta a little bit. A lot of people were predicting a Super Bowl hangover. To lose a Super Bowl that way would be very hard for them to get over, but they've actually looked pretty good in the first 2 weeks, especially last week, big test, as I said, in their new fancy stadium against the Green Bay Packers that a lot of people have as a Super Bowl contender as well.
No, they did look good last week, but it seems like you're forgetting the previous week against Chicago when they nearly lost to Mike Glennon and the Bears. I mean, they had four cracks at beating the Falcons from the 5-yard line. They dropped all their passes. They obviously choked like the Falcons in the Super Bowl, but it was the Chicago Bears.
And so they won.
they won barely.
Yeah.
I hesitate to call that a victory.
Is there a column there that's like W with a small B at the bottom?
Yeah, I think it was more of a moral victory than it was a real victory, but
it was actually both.
It wasn't a moral. They nearly lost to the Bears. Nearly. And Mike Glennon, nearly.
They nearly won the Super Bowl, too. They still won against them. They're 2-0. Look,
they're 2-0. Okay.
Last week, especially, I think they're going to miss Vic Beasley, who's out for a month now. Obviously, that defense is built on speed and getting to the quarterback. Falcons defense, which just collapsed in the Super Bowl, was staunch enough against the Bears that they did win in week one. But, you know... Green Bay is a team that has, we see Aaron Rodgers rings up points on anyone. I was impressed by the Falcons defense last week. All I'm saying is I thought that they would really stumble coming out of the gate. Maybe we have to get to the playoffs to see if they're really over it, but tell me a better team in the NFC right now.
A better team in the NFC.
See, this is where I wish we had the Jeopardy. Music going.
I'm thinking,
Washington mediocre, Philadelphia mediocre. Like, run down the list. I still think Tampa Bay looked good last week.
They did.
I know they're more of a dark horse. They've only played the one game because of Hurricane Irma. They didn't play week one. But Tampa Bay, it was a dark horse for a lot of prognosticators going into the season. Maybe a team to keep an eye on as Jameis Winston develops as a quarterback. They got a good defense and they've put some good players around Jameis Winston in the skill positions. You know, maybe Tampa Bay, Carolina is another team. I mean, JJ, you talked about the Seahawks struggles with the 49ers. 49ers looked like the worst team in the NFL against Carolina in week one. And then last week, Carolina looked awful.
That's true. Another team. Sorry, NFC. Detroit. 2-0. We'll find out this weekend because they play Atlanta. It'll be the litmus test to see, you know, who the powerhouse in the NFC is going to be early going. So that's kind of going to be a one to watch. We touched on in our Geek versus Greek NFL picks, which you can find at provincesports.com. Also, where you can go to lazynfl.com and enter a contest for these awesome recliners. Very comfortable, by the way. So NFC, you said you were going to touch on the Lions.
Well, I just look at the Lions this week, and you know they are 2-0. They play Atlanta. They host Atlanta, and you know Detroit's a lot of those teams that it's not just the fact they've won two games; it's how they've won them. People impressed with Matt Stafford, but probably the bigger story is impressed with the rebuilt Detroit defense. And I'm looking at this and saying, well, we've seen false dawns from the Lions before. If you actually want to take them seriously, they got to beat the Falcons this weekend.
That's exactly true. Yeah. That's very true.
So how do you think that 2-0 is a bit of a fallacy, or do you think this is a team to be reckoned
with? Oh, I think they deserve to be 2-0, and I think they're a team to be reckoned with. But the Falcons are going to be the first real test for Detroit. How they do this weekend will shape a lot of what happens for them going forward. So, Falcons can score. Falcons have a very good defense. You know, it's going to be a big test for Matt Stafford. We'll see if he's worth that massive contract.
Just a reminder that this is the Lazy Boy NFL podcast. There's only one way to watch the NFL, JJ, and that's on a Lazy Boy recliner. I wish we had some NFL to watch right now as we're sitting in here. They do have 4 locations in the Lower Mainland. Check them out at lazyboy.com or visit one of the stores in Richmond, Coquitlam, Langley, and North Van. Go to lazynfl.com in order to win tickets, furniture, maybe some other surprises thrown in there as well. We talked about the Falcons and the Lions. I wanted to touch on another intriguing matchup for me. The Cleveland Browns at the Indianapolis Colts. Now, the Cleveland Browns are 0-2. Yes. However, I think there has been a fairer amount of surprise at how the Browns have looked. They have been in both games. They lost. Their young players are showing an improvement. They haven't had the number one overall pick, Myles Garrett, play yet, dealing with an ankle injury. People like the quarterback play. They like some of the skill positions. They're loaded for draft picks next week. So 2-0-2 teams, but probably more optimism around Cleveland. Now, the Bengals did do the first firing of the season, firing their offensive coordinator. But if
how do you feel about that?
We'll get to that in a second. But I'm looking at the Colts, and even though Andrew Luck has been injured, how much longer does Chuck Pagano have left? Because they have been, you know, again, dealing with injuries, fair enough. They were horrendous last year. The GM got the axe. A lot of people thought the coach would. You know, I wonder if Chuck Pagano is going to be the first coach fired. And I know this game's at home. If they were to lose to the Browns, do you think is it too early to see a coaching change?
Well, I think if anyone loses to the Browns, the coach deserves to be fired. I think that's a fireable offense right there. But yeah, definitely he could be out the door. But the thing, he hasn't been fired yet, which tells me he must have some kind of something, some Russian tape of someone being R. Kelly'd on or something. He must have some kind of hold over someone if he hasn't been fired yet. So I don't know if he'll be fired, you know, if he loses to the Browns, which he should. But, you know, maybe a little further on down the line when it becomes untenable and, you know, the owner gets his hands on whatever blackmail material he might have.
You tend to look at it if you're, you know, only two or three games into the season. You definitely,
you don't want to overreact.
No, exactly. And he does have an injured quarterback, but the Colts really perpetually the last three seasons have been one of the most disappointing teams in the NFL. I've been expecting more. We know about Andrew Luck. You know you need players around that. But to me, they're a team that just continues to flounder, and they have looked bad in their first two games as well. You know, again, they get pasted the first week in one of the bigger blowouts around the league against the Rams, and then the Rams didn't look great last week. So it's not as if the Rams have turned things around and are some juggernaut. So I'm still grasping a little bit, JJ, at which teams I need to really raise an eyebrow to so far. After 2 weeks, there's a lot of teams I don't have a handle on. You know, what are the Dallas Cowboys really? What are the Philadelphia Eagles? What are the Chargers? You know, we talked about it. The first week was a postponement between the Dolphins and Bucks. They both looked good last week. Are those two teams for real? Jacksonville looked good the first week, looked terrible last week. Whoa. So there's a lot of teams out here that intrigue me. Who are the teams that you're looking at after the first 2 weeks that you're not sure where they're going
to end? Well, honestly, as we know, I am a Raiders fan, so I'm going to take it back to the AFC West. I am interested to see what happens with the LA Chargers, because this is a team that finds a way to lose. They have a remarkable record. Since the start of 2015, in games decided by 3 points or less, they're 2-9. In one score games over that same span, they're 4-18. They're 0-2 this year. They had a game winning field goal blocked, and then they missed the game winning field goal last game out. It's this team. It comes down to those close games. They find a way to lose, and you see Philip Rivers have to go to center field and shake hands, and you know what he's thinking. He's like, what the hell am I doing here? How did I just lose a close game again? So I'm going to keep my eye on the Chargers, because it gives me great shade and fruit to see this happen to them.
So as we look at as we finish up looking at week two, we're going to do a thing here every week called the Lazy Boy of the Week. So there are a couple of ways you could read that. Players being lazy or being comfortable.
Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, and not being stressed. Let's talk about Ezekiel Elliott giving up off an interception. Dak Prescott throws an interception, and while this wild chase is going on down the other end of the field, Elliott puts his hands on his hips and makes no effort to run back and make a tackle. Does that bother you or not?
I mean, he was going the other direction when the ball was intercepted, so I can understand why he didn't pursue, but the fact that two of his offensive linemen hustled their big fat jelly butts down the field to track down the interception, that just made it look worse. When you have guys who are 350 plus pounds, rumbling, a stumbling, a shaking everywhere going down the field, and you're standing there with your hands on your hips in your little crop top shirt, it makes you look bad.
It's like me beating you to the news meeting.
Which happens every day, yeah. I'm going to say.
It does make you look bad. I always think in the NFL, you never know what can happen. You can say, yeah, I was going the other way. Yeah, I'll never catch him. We've seen guys who intercept the ball and on a return, they fumble and it goes back the other way. I think there's no, yeah,
never give up.
No way to quit on that play. There was another player though, if we're talking about guys who got to kick back and take it easy and basically play half the game as if they were in a lazy boy recliner in the pocket, you had someone else in mind.
That quarterback from that team near Boston, those guys.
Jimmy Garoppolo?
Yes, that's exactly right. No, the other guy that's married to the woman who I'm not going to mention. I'm not going to say his name. I don't want to say his name.
Tom Brady.
You can say it.
Amazing first
time. I will not put his name on my lips. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen.
All right. So he's your lazy boy of the week. Now, this, again, I don't want this to be a negative connotation, but someone else who really did spend Sunday in a recliner watching the action was Eddie Lacy from the Seahawks. Big offseason acquisition. Obviously, a guy who struggled with his weight, spent a lot of time reclining and eating and watching rather than working out. Seriously, a lot of fun made of Eddie Lacy's weight. But after one game, guy was a healthy scratch, got benched. What's Eddie Lacy's future in Seattle?
It's one game. I mean, he's kind of the Oprah of the NFL, and that everyone's always talking about his weight. You know, he's getting fat. He's in shape. Oh, there he is eating cheeseburgers. It's tough. There was a good story on ESPN today on ESPN.com about the abuse that he takes in social media and on Twitter. And, he talks about he opens up about having to deal with it. And it's quite a good piece. But I think he just needs to be utilized more. Like, Seattle needs to improve their ground game. Give him a chance. Give him 20 carries in a game. See what happens. Turn him into a workhorse like he used to be. Instead of making him a healthy scratch, instead of sitting him on the sidelines, use him. See what happens. It can't be any worse than how they're doing right now.
So you mentioned the Bengals. I'll bring him up as we segue into our last topic here. That is a team that, I believe it starts with the quarterback. A guy who was a second-round draft pick who started off poorly, got the team to the playoffs 5 years in a row, and has taken a dramatic drop off the last two seasons. So Andy Dalton does take a lot of heat. They fired their offensive coordinator, but the issue is that team has a ton of weapons. I look at first-round draft pick John Ross. I look at A.J. Green. Honestly, one of the best receivers in the game. I think targeted only 5 times against Houston. I look at Joe Mixon. I look at Giovanni Bernard. I look at Jeremy Hill. I look at Tyler Eifert. They have a lot of offensive weapons. However, they haven't scored a touchdown in their first two games this year. So the offensive coordinator takes the blame. But what was interesting to me, JJ, was there were calls anonymously through the media from certain players who are frustrated that the team isn't taking a look at one Mr. Colin Kaepernick, thinking, look, we're 2 games into the season. We're playing Green Bay this week. If Andy Dalton's going to continue to hold all these great offensive players back, maybe we need to look at another proven NFL quarterback who has been to the Super Bowl. Why isn't Colin Kaepernick playing for an NFL team right now?
Well, first of all, I mean, the Bengals, you talk about their offensive start. They've scored 9 points this season.
Dead
last in the league. Yeah, last.
Both games at home.
Yeah, behind San Fran, Jacksonville. I mean, these are some Cleveland. He's behind terrible teams. So I pity the fool that's a Bengals fan. But with Colin Kaepernick, I think it's pretty clear it's not because of his skill as a quarterback that he isn't signed. The deeper underlying thing is there must be some kind of collusion to not have him signed, because he is too good a player to not be signed by anyone. Sure, he didn't have great numbers last year, but look at where he was playing. He was playing on a really shoddy offense in San Fran. So if he's not signed, it's not because of his skill as a player. It's what he represents. And that speaks to a larger issue in the U.S. right now, where we're seeing a lot more divisiveness than we have in the past decade. It's really coming to a head. It's easy for us to sit up here and watch it. I don't know what it's like when you're when you're embroiled in it down there and you can't see out of your little silo, but it seems pretty clear as to what's going on down there.
And I believe, you know, you look at what happened to Michael Bennett in Las Vegas, which sprung up before the first week. I think you're going to see these issues grow as long as the season goes along. And the anthem protests are being noticed every week. Who's not standing for the anthem? Who's, you know, linked arm in arm? Who has their fist in the air? It's becoming, you want to talk about Kaepernick being a distraction. By trying to shut him out, it's actually made it worse. And I think obviously where you've got Andrew Luck injured and you've got a Jacoby Brissett playing in Indianapolis, you may look at that Indianapolis market dead center in the middle of the country and go, we're not sure how our fans are going to abide to someone, you know, protesting the national anthem. But you would have to think when you look at the quarterbacks around the league, there has to be a place for Colin Kaepernick, at least holding a clipboard in case someone gets hurt. I go back to the Bengals. It's a city which has had some horrendous race problems, but it's somewhat of an enlightened city because of that. And you've got Andy Dalton, and then you got A.J. McCarron, who was a national championship winner at Alabama, but only a fifth-round draft pick. When he's played, he's looked good. There's a call in Cincinnati to say, well, if Dalton's not going to do it, we need to see what A.J.'s there, but he's in the last year of his contract. Signing Kaepernick on a one-year deal, it only makes football sense to me, but that's why I'm a newspaper editor and not an NFL general manager.
You know, there very rarely could be that fear of a backlash. I mean, you talk about anthem protests, you know, earlier this month in Detroit. It's not just limited to the players. There was a guy in the stands who noticed this black couple sitting beside him during the national anthem. And bear in mind, Detroit is like 80% black. And he took a picture of these two and posted it on social media, and with a very offensive caption, and with the basically saying, if you don't like it, get the hell out of our country. And I mean, the what happened next was pretty obvious. You knew what was going to happen. People went after this guy. His name was Dave Doptis. His business had to be shuttered. He lost his season tickets to the Detroit Lions. And what was interesting, sorry, another segue here, is the woman who was in the photograph and had complained to the Lions, she was actually sitting for the anthem, not because of any Black Lives Matter kind of topic, but because there is a stanza in the U.S. national anthem that actually calls for the killing of slaves. And I had not realized this until she had brought it up, and I looked it up, and yeah, it's true.
It's like the extended version, the 12-inch mix of the national anthem. Those lyrics we don't often hear. I don't know if you want to run through them. You told me about them earlier. I was a little surprised, too. I'd never heard of
it. If I can remember correctly, it was something about slaves not being able to hide from gloom or the grave. And, you know, some historians have interpreted this as it referring to slaves who were fighting with the British. But they were fighting with the British because the British promised them freedom. You know, they were living in a system where they were indentured slaves. They were not even considered humans. So that's what they were fighting for. And still, to call for the death of these people, and this is the national anthem. This is, you know, the song that is supposed to represent your country, your nation as a whole, and you're calling for the death of their descendants. It blows my mind. I understand completely why she would sit. If I lived down there, I would sit too. That's right. I would sit. Come after me on Twitter.
So if you go to a Canucks game and they're playing both anthems, what are you going to do, Mr. J.J. Adams?
No, I will stand and I will sing my heart out for the Canadian anthem, as I always do. Hand on my heart. I will be respectful, and I will respectfully decline to sing the Star Spangled Banner and remain in my seat in my own silent protest.
I got to get this man a Canucks ticket. I don't want to see that happen. All right. Before we finish up, we did talk about the Falcons and Lions. Are there any other games on the schedule this week that catch your eye?
This week, we talked about the Giants and Eagles in our video, the Geek versus the Greek, and that's going to be interesting to see what happens there. Are the Giants really that bad? Can they turn things around? They're desperate. If they don't win, they will be in serious trouble. Not many, I think three teams in the past 2 years have made the playoffs after starting 0-2. So if they don't win and they start 0-3, I think you could pretty much seal it for them unless they go on some amazing tear towards the tail end of the season.
Well, the only thing I think that would save them is the NFC East does have a lot of questions. We'll still see what happens for the with the Cowboys as the year goes on. They've got the Cardinals on Monday night, which again is an intriguing game because it's really hard to figure out what the Cardinals are without David Johnson this year. Not getting good play from Carson Palmer. They, you know, there's
defense
a lot that
so
was
strong,
yeah, that was a team that was very close a couple of years ago, and now you look at where they are and are they really a contender? Aren't they? I think there's a lot of maybe teams this week. That's, you know, I am intrigued, obviously, as I said, by the Browns and Colts this week because I think the Browns are ready to surprise a few people.
You're sucking from punishment. You just talked about how you didn't like watching all these low-scoring affairs, and you're like, you're intrigued by the Browns and the Colts.
Yeah, because you're going to see lots of mistakes, which should equal lots of points. Another game I got my eye on, JJ, is Seahawks-Titans. You know, Seattle needs to – they're on the road – you know, they're playing a young quarterback who people are expecting bigger things from this year. But I think the Seahawks defense knows what their job is. But if the offense struggles again, I think you're going to start to see some cracks in Seattle. Obviously, we had this offseason drama where allegedly Richard Sherman has developed a bit of a frosty relationship with Russell Wilson. If the Seahawks defense puts in another shift for a third straight week and they're not seeing the offense held up their end of the bargain, I think we're going to see some fireworks in Seattle.
I don't know. I mean, traditionally, that's what they do. They seem to be, last few seasons, they've been really slow out of the gate. There's been lots of questions, lots of the end is nigh, and they always seem to turn things around and have a very strong second half. So I wouldn't write them off just yet, even though I think they're going to lose this weekend.
All right. Well, I think we'll wrap that up for this week. Thank you for joining us for the Lazy Boy NFL podcast. You can win wonderful Lazy Boy furniture, football tickets, trips to Seattle. Just go to lazynfl.com and enter. It's a really simple contest. Just head to the website, put your details in, and you could be a winner. You can also go and check out Lazy Boy at their four stores in the Lower Mainland, Richmond, Coquitlam, Langley, and North Van. They're on United Boulevard in Richmond, St. Edward's Drive in Richmond, West 14th in North Van, and on the bypass in Langley. Thank you to you, JJ Adams. Thanks to our producer, Nikki Bennett. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Lazy Boy.